Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Edward Lima, who is Professor of Economics at the University of California, Los Angeles. Ed and I met at the Global Economic Symposium in Schleswig-Holstein, Germany in September 2008, where he had been speaking at a panel on inequality and globalization, and introduced the concept of neurofacturing. I asked Ed to explain what he meant by this idea and how it relates to inequality.
Well, I'm trying to argue that the wealth was created in the 20th century by moving workers off the farms onto the factory floor into an industrial society. But most countries, all the developed countries, are having sharp reductions of their employment shares in manufacturing. And more value added is originating in intellectual service activities, which I'm going to call neurofacturing in order to make a parallel with manufacturing. Now, I don't mean to say that every activity inside of manufacturing has to do with manual work. There's a lot of brain work in manufacturing that would include neurofacturing as well. So I'm really making the point that we're having a shift of most of these societies from creating wealth with physical labor, manual and manufacturing, into brain work of one form or another. And the reason that's important is that the equipment that these neurofacturing workers have is very different now than it was 30 or 40 years ago. Throughout hundreds of years before the 1970s, these neurofacturing workers, the idea workers, would push pencils over paper or push chalk on a board, and they made extraordinary innovations and both in terms of product and process. But it's slow work to push pencil and push chalk over the boards and paper. But the PC and the internet have enormously improved the productivity of these thought workers, of these neurofacturing workers. And the concern that I have is that it's not just an increase in productivity, it's an innovation that works well for some people but not for others. So the way to think about it is to contrast a forklift with a microphone. If you think about a forklift, a little bit of training allows everyone to drive the forklift and therefore to get a good job as a forklift driver. And you're enormously more productive than if you had to lift the product yourself. So a forklift is a force for much greater productivity, higher wages, but a great egalitarian. Everybody's going to get paid the same on the factory floor. That's what happened when we went from agrarian to manufacturing, industrial society. Is we de-skilled manufacturing, very high wages in manufacturing, three times what they were in agriculture, but they're also basically the same for everybody. It was where we really built the American middle class and the factories of the United States. But now as we shift toward a more neurofactoring-based economy, the equipment that we have to operate in neurofactoring is quite unlike the equipment that's used in manufacturing, because it tends to amplify differences rather than attenuate them. The analogy would be with the microphone. A microphone allows one entertainer to sing to the whole globe. The microphone and other recording equipment and the disc, etc., that are transmitted everywhere. And what that does is it creates a highly concentrated income distribution where the few real winners, those with talent and work hard, but talent is absolutely critical, plus the hard work, they get paid enormously. The Hollywood-style outcome, and the rest of the workers who would like to be one of these stars are working in restaurants or doing some local service activities in Los Angeles. So it's a very unequal kind of income distribution as a consequence of the technology, which allows the few to serve the many. And that's what's happening with the personal computer on my desk and on most of our desks, where we've had a huge increase in our productivity, which allows us to serve a larger market base, but it also concentrates the demand on the people who are most talented, can produce the most creative, most valuable kinds of product. And what I worry about is not globalization so much. When I look forward, I worry that this technology of the 21st century, the PC and the internet, the technology that supports neurofactoring, that's leading into a kind of highly unequal society, and a society that's going to be very uncomfortable, particularly in the United States, which is built fundamentally on this myth of equality of opportunity. And when we have a large number of workers who don't really have the opportunity because they don't have the inherent talent, it's going to be difficult to deal with it.
Well, I was going to say, so this is really it's a technology rather than a trade story of growing inequality, particularly in countries like the United States and the UK.
Yeah.
How do we tackle that? What are the key things doing? I mean, it must be something to do with skills and education, I guess.
Well, you and I, as parents or grandparents in my case, we know what we have to do for our kids. Our kids have to have the kind of education which is appropriate to this new environment. It's not a kind of rote learning. Rote learning isn't going to get you a decent job because a computer can do rote learning better than any human. The humans who will do well in this new environment will be able to solve complex problems. They'll have creative analytical abilities, the kinds of things that computers can't do. They solve the new problems. The old problems are programmed. They're already solved in the computer. We need to allow our kids to have the abilities to solve the problems of the future. And that does require a different kind of education. You don't want them just to go to school and get to school on time and do what the teacher says to do and just to learn to count to 10 and add 2 and 2. They've got to have a lot more creative problem-solving exercises. The way I like to say it, it's training versus education. Training is what I do to you. Training is what Pavlov does to his dog. So if you bark at the right place and I give you a reward, by the end of this interview, you'll be barking just right, and you'll be well-trained. But education is different. Education is something that you, the student, does, not the teacher. What the teacher is a coach in an educational setting, providing ambiguous problem-solving exercises for the students to go through. So our educational system has way too much training. We need the training. You know, you got to learn how to multiply and add. But we need to prepare the students for the 21st century for the neurofactoring jobs, and that means to have an educated workforce, not just a trained workforce.
So how does this fit with the globalization story? I mean, we there's been a lot of talk at this symposium about the rise of China and India, particularly, and the fact that those countries are very much focused on education. They seem to see the importance of it. Do you see at the moment that those forces, the forces of those rising countries in the developed world, are not having such a big impact on inequality in the developed world?
Well, I studied U.S. income inequality a long time ago and came to the conclusion that trade was mattering very greatly. But that was back when the U.S. had a product mix in which many products that were made in the U.S. were also being made in China. And that creates a kind of arbitrage links between those two economies, and that is a force for lower wages for the workers who are producing the same products that are made in China. But in response to the Chinese especially, but other low-wage countries as well, the U.S. has upgraded its product mix. The same thing is true in most of Europe. The result is there's not a whole lot of product anymore that's competing. The product produced in these high-wage countries is actually competing with China. The Chinese competition is affecting especially Latin America. They're still trying to work in that market niche. But the high-wage countries have pretty much solved the problem. The solution is always there's a threat that's going to get unraveled because the Chinese are pushing farther up the value-added chain in manufacturing. But the way to stay ahead is, again, education. So education is definitely the solution to the globalization problem because through education, we can make sure that we produce a product mix that's not emanating out of the low-wage countries. But education is not the solution to the income inequality that comes from neurofactoring, as I described it, because compensatory education isn't going to turn me into Pavarotti. And if it's a Pavarotti type of economy that we're growing into, it's the few who have the talent, they work hard, they get educated, but there's a very, very important talent base that's going to drive incomes in the future. And compensatory education isn't going to solve the problem. We have a very deep, growing income inequality that has nothing to do with globalization. And I think it's going to affect, it folds in slowly, it's no sure thing. Just a slight aside, Disney has in their movie WALL-E, I don't know how many people listening to this have actually seen WALL-E, but Disney has an image of what the future entails, which is an egalitarian image, in which the robots and computers carry out every function for human beings, both the manual and the intellectual. And all humans have to do is lie in chaise lounges around pools and eat the luscious foods that's being brought to them by the robots. That's an egalitarian consequence of incredible productivity improvements through robotization and computerization. That, to me, is not the likely one. The more likely one is there are going to be a few who have extraordinary riches and the many who are still going to be struggling along and are going to be left behind to a large extent.
Not the first time, then, that Disney has painted a fantasy world. Ed Lima, many thanks.
Thank you.